Well, hey there, everybody. Welcome to Cambridge Inside Out. My name is Robert Winters, and you're not. And over there in the other corner.
I can say my name. My name is Patrick Barrett. It's my first time on the show. Thank you for having me, Robert. This is great.
Right. This is a novel appearance. You know, we've been trying to get you for a long, long time here, you know, and I feel very successful.
Long time listener, first time caller.
By the way, I'll take this as an opportunity just to throw something out there. Wait, that sounds like a bad expression, doesn't it? Which is that, you know, I'm very grateful for Mr. Barrett here for sort of essentially becoming the new Judy for a while. I'm not just making any assumptions about this being a
permanent. I am not the person you should be thanking. I think you should be thanking Norma Jean Barrett, Jedediah Barrett, and Gemma Barrett, all of whom are upstairs right now going, why is Daddy downstairs again?
Yeah. Well, we are stealing you from your family, and I do appreciate it. But so if there are other people who feel like they want to, like, you know, put in a little time doing a half hour or an hour of this, get in touch. And the other shout I want to do here is I've been quietly working with John Pitkin on, you know, we have kind of a big plan of doing some video productions, which are largely historical. It was largely inspired by questions about city charter, but it's actually gone off into quite a few other directions, having to do with, you know, voting in Cambridge, you know, going back to the days of when it was a town and whatever. You know, I find myself sort of digging in here. I have my annual records, city records from 1886, one of many things I've got on my shelf. But one of the things we really desperately need is somebody beyond me who's pretty, knows a thing or two about video editing and maybe helping produce programs and such. So if that's something that floats your boat, definitely get in touch. So anyway, so there is a couple of interesting things that are happening or soon to happen around town. One of which I thought maybe we could start off on is just talking, having to do with elections. Now, I believe it was November 2nd or thereabouts, is when I think when I first learned that school committee member Akriti Bambi has submitted her resignation from the Cambridge School Committee effective today. So I don't know if they have a school committee meeting, but if they do, they're probably going to, you know, give her a gold watch or something like that and a big send off, you know.
I didn't realize we had a school committee, Robert. This is news to me. Thank you.
I'm not the biggest follower of school committee these days. I'm not, and I won't hide from the fact that I haven't been particularly thrilled. We have a school committee that seems to focus on all the things that I really don't care that much about. You know, I'm a mathematics teacher.
Careful, Robert, careful. I'm about to cancel you right now.
I know. So in some respects, it's neither here nor there to me. But the thing is, I do have a certain interest in elections and election systems that I think a lot of people know about. So what I wanted to do is just do something kind of unusual here. So actually, if you don't mind, I'm going to pop over here, do a little quick share screen to actually see if we can pull this off here. Right. So hopefully everybody can see this. So it was actually November 2nd is when I first heard about it. But the truth of the matter is that I already knew who would replace any one of the school committee members or city councilors.
My God.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I had the ballot data and the election tabulation software. So I actually did that a year ago yesterday. So since November 14th, 2021, it has been no secret who would replace whom. So what you're seeing here, assuming everybody can see this, is basically who would replace, should there be a vacancy, and apparently now there is one, for each of the city council members, as well as each of the school committee members.
I have to say, Robert, I'm feeling a bit triggered looking at this right now. Very triggered. I don't like what I'm seeing, but please continue. I'm sorry.
All right. So, you can see here, for example, when the white smoke goes up the chimney, we will see that Akriti Bambi's replacement will indeed be Carolyn Hunter, right? She would actually have replaced three of the six members of the school committee should they leave. And Daria Johnson would have replaced David Weinstein or Ms. Wilson. And only Mr. Rojas Villarreal would be replaced by Christopher Lim. But there were actually only three. There were only nine candidates, six of whom were elected in the regular election. So there were really only three candidates who were not elected, when they become the ones who are eligible to become replacements. And the way it is done is you simply take the ballot data, essentially the ballots that elected the vacating member, and you basically run like a little PR count, where, you know, just a basically an instant runoff election to basically winnow it down to see who's the last person standing. Now,
Robert, is this related to our crazy Meshug voting system?
Well, it is. We elect our school committee members as well as city councilors via proportional representation, which involves transferable ballots and the works, right?
Now, that comes from of the Latin to be a socialist. Is that correct?
You know, there were socialists who supported it, but in fact, it is most certainly not necessarily associated with socialists, right? But it is sort of becoming a little bit, it's enjoying a renewed popularity, at least in discussion purposes and elsewhere. Certainly transferable ballots and ranked ballots, ranked choice voting is getting a lot of attention. It's actually been adopted in the state of Alaska, for example, for all their elections, and I believe state of Maine as well. So, but just so everybody understands, yes, you can see who did it, but I wanted to show things I've never actually shown people publicly before, which is that the actual ballot data that's going to be used in the election it's come from a file called the Final Piles Report. And this is what it actually looks like. Okay. This is the actual one. It's not the one that was from the city. This is when I ran the election, just as a test in November 14th of 2021. You can see the names of the candidates, six of whom were elected. And the way vacancy recount works is you basically have the ballot data, and you can actually see Bambi's ballot data, the ballots were actually used in the sequence she received them when she was actually elected. You know, there are candidate codes. You don't really want to see all the names written out over and over and over again. So you can see what CO1, CO2, CO3, what the individuals, those things correspond to. But these are the actual ballots. You can see that there were a lot of ones with CO1s because these were the ballots that were used to elect her, right? At least those are her number one votes. Later down, I'm not going to scroll down, I assure you. You'll see that there, you'll also then see ones that she would have received by transfer, but I believe she may have actually gone over quota, so you won't actually see any of those here. But what you see,
like,
also
showing you the matrix here. This is like,
it is like a matrix, yeah. But you can also see the secondary preferences, third preferences, fourth, fifth, all the way down. So these are the ballots. This is her final pile, so to speak. And all you really have to do to run a recount, a vacancy recount in Cambridge, is sort of scroll down to where after it says exclude candidate, these are the people who were elected in the first go round, so we don't want to reelect them, right? You just basically edit one line here to remove a hashtag where it says dot Cambridge vacancy recount, and you put in the candidate code, CO1, and then you just run it. That's all there is to it. You know?
Should this be making me dizzy by staring at it? I feel like I need to take Dramamine.
It is meant to sort of, if you were just mildly high off cannabis, it would be designed to kill the buzz.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very sober right now.
Right. Okay. All right. But basically that's what the file looks like. Now, when you actually run the election, this is what the files that are produced by the tabulation software. So some people any people who are watching this, we'll already have seen this for the regular election. It doesn't really look any different. It's the same output files. It's just the first one here is this, and you just go to the first count. So when you, and this will be what we'll see in a week or two whenever they actually get around to doing this recount. There are only three people eligible to receive ballots, but Carolyn Hunter, you know, starts out in the lead and stays in the lead. So that's the first count. The next count, right? You get rid of all the write-ins and such. And then after you've defeated Christopher Lim, you do that. Now you're left with just two candidates.
He was a great candidate, by the way.
He was a great candidate. I'd love to see him run again. I'd love to see him elected. I really would.
He's a neighbor. He's a really good guy.
He is a really good guy. But Carolyn Hunter ends up edging out Daria Johnson, 739 to 638, right? And that's pretty much it. And then the next final count is just basically just defeating those ones, tossing them, and then declaring the person to be elected. And that's pretty much all there is to it, right? I will just mention here, though, that what I did just for fun, if anybody wants to sort of fool around
with this. That is not fun, Robert. We have to talk about what fun is. This is not fun.
You know, fun is a subjective matter, right? But, you know, if you were to, for example, you know, look at a candidate like Mark McGovern, for example, if he were to vacate, his replacement would be Jeevan Sabrina Wheeler. But
Mark, please live forever.
But how it happens, you see, there were a lot more eligible candidates because there were just a lot more candidates who ran for city council. Sabrina Wheeler starts off with that. Remember, this is the ABC connection, right? The organization, they were, you know, both endorsed by the same organization. So you'll tend to see that. Strangely, wow. You see Nicola Williams actually does second best, who was the, you know, diametric opposite. So voters.
And this is what keeps me from running for city council. Like, I look at the bottom guys there, like, you know, Greg and Robert. Like, I don't believe I would get 27 votes.
you'd get more than that, I assure you. Anyway, so, you know, I'll just sort of cut to the chase. But after you knock off the riffraff, when you get down here, you would start to see it's actually a little bit competitive. Right, it seems to be competitive in the end, down to four, down to three. Once you defeat Joe McGurk, then it's Sabrina Wheeler wins by about 54 votes. It's not by a big margin or anything like
so
that.
So, was Joe beat Theo?
What's that?
Did Joe beat Theodora?
Well, in that one, I think so. Yeah. Huh. No, actually, not in that one. Ooh. One of the things I find interesting, just in case people think that, well, these are ABC candidates, they're all alike, you know, that's just completely nonsense. For example, if Paul Toner were to vacate, his replacement would not be Jeevan Sabrina Wheeler. In fact, it's quite interesting to see that if you actually took the Paul Toner ballots, Joe McGurk is overwhelmingly the favorite replacement. I mean, not even close.
But here's the problem with that. Toner is fantastic. And while I love Joe, I would take Toner night and day. but I would like to see McGurk replace maybe, you know, Zondervan or something like that. I don't know.
Joe McGurk and Paul Toner actually palled around quite a bit. They did a lot of events together. I think there was a lot of kind of coordination between the two.
Yeah.
Right. And but anyway, you know, the outcome for that particular count was never in doubt. I mean, just never in doubt, not even close. Like, it's really like a 3-to-1 ratio to the next nearest competitor. So anyway, I won't belabor the point a whole lot more than that. Just to say that the it's kind of interesting to kind of see the patterns for those of us who nerd out a little bit on this stuff here. But, and I didn't mean to sort of steal the thunder of, or destroy the sense of suspense about who would be Akriti Bambi's replacement, because as I like to point out to people, you know, if the president of the United States were to vacate the office, everybody in the country knows who would replace the president. It's not meant to be a secret. It's a public record, right? And more. So anyway, so my apologies to those who thought I was nerding out a little bit too much. And I'm sure there are others who probably appreciated it too. So
I blacked out, Robert, honestly.
Right. Can I send you some virtual smelling salts? I need to like bring you back to life here, you know? but anyway, it is sort of timely. They have not yet scheduled a date for the vacancy recount. They technically have to bring in the sort of the person who operates the software, but obviously, you know, any fool could operate the software. See?
Obviously.
Obviously, I've just proven that, right? So, but anyway, so that's here. Another little update, I'm not going to show the graphs here, I'll just sort of mention it though, is that, you know, we've been still living to some degree under the shadow of COVID for 2.5 years now, something like that, more than that, I think. And, you know, we've
it's been forever, Robert, actually. The legal time is forever.
It has been a long, long time. And there are a few things to say about it. One is just on terms of the health front is that though there are other, you know, illnesses that are coming up, and the fact that everybody wore a mask last year meant that nobody got the flu. So everybody's going to get the flu this year because, you know, you got to build up resistance, and nobody did. So, you know, let's suffer through the flu. But in terms of COVID numbers, the dailies had been up as high as 300 something new cases a day. For the first time in over a year, they dropped into single digits. And they've been dropping like one a day. So we're actually down to, I believe, 7.4 new cases per day, which is actually really good. So, you know, again, it ain't over, but, you know, I think there's some good reasons to believe that another surge like we had a year ago is less likely.
I've had to sign several legal documents that I'm now no longer allowed to publicly speak on COVID. So I'm going to refrain from any comment or retort. So
what I generally do, like I did this in the summer, Harvard Summer School, is I actually talked with people who are in the field, you know, people who study epidemiology, virology, and really know a lot about the biology of the way viruses work and mutate, including the coronavirus. And they basically said, you know, yes, it came out as a novel virus, but in many respects, the pattern that it's been going through with its mutations is actually not all that unusual. And that they rather optimistically felt that by the time this coming spring rolls around, we may very well just be looking at this as sort of a non-issue. So,
well, I'm not sure if you've seen the rest of the country, Robert, but I believe most people have moved on.
I'm not necessarily referring to that fact. The socially people have moved on. I'm just saying in terms of the actual threat of the virus, even getting sick, it will probably start to become, as I say, a non-issue. At some point, you know, we'll be looking back at the historical record of those terrible few years and talking about it like it's more in the past tense. At least that's what the experts who I've talked about seem to optimistically believe. So, all right. So now, on the other hand, some of the things that actually were put into place in response to COVID, things like outdoor patios, mm-hmm. You know, extending, you know, sidewalk dining out into the street, right? Dramatic reduction, if not eradication, of various licensing fees in order to sort of encourage, you know, businesses to get through, right? A lot of ARPA funds, I don't think that's coming back anymore, right? No. But we are kind of in this period of essentially either phasing out or winding down or continuing various things that were done during the time. I believe Central Square is going to be, at least the south side of Mass Ave and Central Square, will be able to keep its outdoor patios for.
And why is that? Because some intrepid.
Because we're the best.
That's right. And don't you forget it. But, you know, we built those patios as an emergency response, but thanks to the help of the License Commission, particularly Nicole, and the city, we were able to make those largely permanent for those restaurants, which in COVID, it saved their lives, essentially saved their livelihoods. You know, the restaurants in Central Square, only 11% of them actually got any restaurant relief. So they were riding on fumes for most of that. But we're also one of the only few districts that's allowed to keep their patios through the season because of how we designed them.
Now there was one item on the city council agenda this on Monday. I believe it was actually from Councillor Zondervan, who was calling on the city. And again, it got a universal vote asking the city manager to look into the possibility of keeping, you know, the patios and things through the winter citywide. Now, my understanding is that there's some good practical reasons why some of these really need to be phased out.
This is a classic Zondervanism. You know, if you only see his name on a policy order, you know something's rotten in Denmark. So there's a lot of reasons why some patios have to come down, and they can all come back in the spring. There's more, it has more to do with logistics, the implementation of bike lanes. DPW needs a certain width for roads, snow plowing, normal stuff. But I think the message really is that none of those have to go away permanently. They can come back. It's just where it does, where there are logistic conflicts, they need to figure it out.
Right. I think in many respects, Central Square, or at least the south side of Mass Avenue Central Square, was quite exceptional in that it was basically one outdoor patio after another, after another, after another, after another. It became sort of like the outdoor patio district. When you, I would go through places like Harvard Square and various places along Mass Ave, you would see, you know, the occasional patio area put out in front of a place, but it was not, they tended to be more spotty and exceptional than just continue, like a continuous strip of them. So
that, all the credit for that goes to Michael Monasteem, Matt Boys Watson, Nina Berg, the BID team for coordinating this and creating a master plan for our patios in the square.
Yeah, and I watched it happen. I also remember a fellow named Mr. Barrett, in one famous little short 8-second video, they said, "What are you doing there?" Because he was screwing together some tables or, you know, some things. And he says, "I'm trying to save capitalism one screw at a time." Right. And I thought, boy, if that doesn't say it all right there, you know. So you should, if that video is available anywhere, you know, you basically have to put that in the archives. That's a keeper. But you know, there's, you know, you kind of see this in other respects around the country too. It's sort of like things that were done in the midst of an emergency, you know, because of COVID, now for some also becomes sort of an excuse, sort of like, well, hey, if we could do it then, let's just continue to do stuff. And some of that's great. I mean, I think some of the patios in Central Square are great, and, you know, continuing them, even if they're just a little scaled back, and, you know, because of logistical reasons at times, I think that's great. But, you know, there are other things that shouldn't necessarily continue, you know, like scaring everybody from going indoors, for example.
So, again, back to my restraining order on speaking on issues related to medical issues in COVID, people have to do what they're going to go do. I think I'm really glad that the council has refrained from getting involved in that kind of discussion. I think if you recall when Mayor Wu in Boston was trying to implement the vaccination passports, a lot of people were really gung-ho, especially a lot of city councilors who were like, why don't we have the system? But if you also recall, she dropped that like a bad habit within almost a week. So her whole plan was to fully implement vaccination passports by like mid-June. And I'm pretty sure the program didn't make it past April.
I think that's exactly right. Exactly right. But, you know, I think there are some people in the political sphere who feel they benefit by maintaining a sense of emergency at all times.
Well, I give massive credit to Louis DePasquale, our past city manager. And also in Somerville, when they didn't jump on the vaccination passport, that was really the death knell for that. And I think now that we know what we know about COVID, the vaccinations, I think it was the right call, obviously. But like, what a crazy time, man, I have to say. You know, right. Some people will all look back on those kinds of things. Like the deep cleaning stuff we did, you know, how much cleaner do I still have warehoused in places? I have a friend of mine who's works at the Boston Ballet, and he tells me like he can't give the stuff away.
Well, and plus, not to mention the plexiglass barriers between everything, you know. You know, I mean, even if there was the tiny little benefit from it, honestly, it just really never matched the need.
I mean, just this the whole thing, it was so ridiculous. You line up your bar with plexiglass, but you know you have a space because a glass has to go underneath it. And and again, like, you know, they always say, you can't talk about COVID unless you're a doctor. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not a doctor, but like, I'm pretty sure COVID is not like, oh my God, there's plexiglass shit. Game over, guys. We're just, you know, we could go over. No, we're not going to go over. That's COVID just goes straight. And right. at like 52 inches is where it hangs out.
Right. Of course, there are other lingering changes that, you know, we've now come to take for granted that we barely even think about them. For example, normally I'd be doing a TV show in the CCTV studios, and CCTV studios are still, for the most part, shut.
And normally I'd be Judy.
And that's right. You know, we're doing this here in Zoom, you know, and, you know, in my classes, I still, there's now a lot more people tuning in online. I do one of my two courses exclusively online. I don't think that would have happened had it not for the fact that we were all thrown into this situation the way we were. So there are some things that are going to continue and some for the better, you know, but
no, to that point, I had a great meeting with the Cambridge Citizens Coalition, not to be confused with the People's Popular Front. But 80 people on a Zoom screen, attending, listening in, learning about, the Buda ordinance. And you know, that was kind of remarkable because I don't think you get 80 people in any of those meetings ever. So like increases attendance and, you know, gets a lot more people engaged. So in that sense, I think it's pretty good.
I agree with you, but I've also been tuning into some of these charter review committee meetings, and I have to say they lose a lot by just virtue of the fact that they are all 100% virtual. The notion about public input is really a fiction at this point. Maybe that will change down the road, but so far it's just a fiction.
I was trying to jump on that because I want to at least get the point on the charter review that council aides need to be included in restrictions. And I think there's some councillors who are open to that idea, but when it came time to go into the Zoom, hop into the Zoom, I just didn't want to do it.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's a welcoming sort of Zoom setting and a maybe a little bit less welcoming kind of Zoom setting. And it's a little subtle to know what.
Well, the Charter Review Committee in particular seems a bit like a black hole to me. It's just like,
you know, I think it maybe it will, that ship may right itself, but right now they began so poorly. I'm not, no criticism of the chair, by the way, but they began so poorly by basically beginning with uninformed gripes, and that's their foundation of where they are right now.
I heard like a list of things they were looking at to review, like extended council terms, and I was like, whoa. Who's asking for that?
Well, we're going to actually have to take a break here, in a couple of seconds here. So anyway, so we will be back shortly on Cambridge Inside Out.